How's it going, everyone? I'm Areep Khan, and this is Cool for Thought. This is part two of our multi-part coverage on the 2016 general election. We've got a brilliant guest gracing us with her presence today to talk about libertarianism, Rand Paul, and some other goodies that I hope will shed some light on how people our age are framing the upcoming presidential election. With us today is Grace Charlton, a third year at the University of Virginia. In addition to serving in the Air Force ROTC, Grace has previously worked with Young Americans for Liberty and is now running her own chapter of Students for RAND at UVA. Although she doesn't speak for the campaign, she's deep in the trenches trying to get Rand Paul elected and might as well be getting paid for it, as far as I'm concerned. Grace is an excellent debater, she's one of the most patriotic people I've ever met, and it won't take you all long to figure out what her dream job is. Thanks for being on with us, Grace.
Thanks for having me.
Now, your support for the Paul family extends beyond RAND, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
That is true.
So when I first met you, I think your Twitter handle was Grace for Ron Paul.
Yes, it was Grace for Ron Paul, and I would live tweet all of the debates using hashtag Ron Paul, hashtag Ron Paul 2012, and got this giant, not giant, semi-large Twitter following, I guess, from doing that. And since he didn't run for re-election in Congress, I changed it to Grace for Liberty. So same principles, just not just with Ron.
So if one of your libertarian followers or one of the people who followed you because you were super pro Rand Paul or Ron Paul, if they met you in real life, would they be able to call you a strict libertarian?
I would say there is a lot of diversity within the libertarian movement, and the liberty movement is kind of what we call it. There are big L's and little L's. So big L's are the Libertarian Party people, which are the small minority and tend to be the older white dudes, who kind of started out before Ron Paul made liberty more popular. And then small L libertarians is an ideology, and which a lot of people would say within the Republican Party, not necessarily. And then even within that, you can find even more
So
factions.
you're saying that the small L libertarians are a part of the Republican Party?
Not necessarily. They oftentimes manifest themselves there in elections, and kind of with Rand Paul are being the dissenting voice compared to the other Republicans, and share the same fiscal conservative values, but not socially, and we differ on defense, I guess you could say, foreign policy. So I wouldn't necessarily classify us there, but that's where a lot of it manifests itself. But just like there are factions within the party, there are factions, I guess, within libertarianism, but we're united by the principle of liberty, and that we should be able to have these different thoughts and opinions.
And is that generally, to somebody who's not familiar with libertarianism, is that how you would describe it?
I would describe libertarianism kind of like a three-legged stool. There's three things to it that make it unique, which are free market economics, so being pro-market, which doesn't necessarily mean pro-business, which Republicans tend to be a lot, and a socially liberal or libertarian kind of view, so being able to do what you want with your personal life and live your life free of any restrictions or regulations or whatever by the government. And then a non-interventionist foreign policy, which is not an isolationist foreign policy, but one that is not stationed in 130 plus countries, but is open to free trade and free movement of people across borders.
Okay, so what do you think has been the evolution of the Libertarian Party, if you can call it a party?
Well, I think to some people it still definitely is a party, but I would definitely consider Ron Paul to be the catalyst of the movement. And so people believed in these ideas of liberty before Ron Paul, and I think some of those people are still the people that make up the Libertarian Party. But with the entrance of Ron Paul in 2008, I thought he was crazy in 2008, but I was also in seventh and eighth grade, so I didn't really know what I was talking about at all. And then really in 2012, when he ran again, that's when I got on the train, and the ideas became way more popular and way more widespread. And so I definitely, at least, would really consider Ron to be the catalyst of making liberty popular and that kind of the ideology of that. And so, like I said, you still have those that are dedicated to the Libertarian Party, but there are even libertarians who don't vote.
Okay. And so you said that the 2012 election was when you really got into Ron Paul.
Mm-hmm.
So did the internet have any role in that? Did the, you know, social media, you know, we mentioned your Twitter account, Grace mm-hmm. for Ron Paul. Did that play a role in changing your views at all?
I would say, so at the time in 2010, I worked for some local Republicans, my local state senator and delegate. And they were strongly Republicans, say they're constitutionalist, which I think doesn't always apply, and very pro-life. And I would go to their events and they would always talk about how they were the party of freedom. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. I didn't see that play out consistently in what they did or how they acted, the policies that they proposed. And a dude dressed up like George Washington would get up and be like, yeah, we need to go back to like our founding principles of freedom. So like gay people can't get married. And I was like, this isn't consistent. I'm not following. This seems okay. very hypocritical. But actually the delegate who does consider himself like a very strong constitutionalist said, you should Google Ron Paul and okay. laughed. Ron Paul's crazy, blah, 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 whatever. But then I kind of did. I did look more into Ron Paul, and watching the debates a lot, I think, is where I saw his ideas showcased the most. But there are several of his videos on YouTube of his speeches that he gave on the floor of the House. And so watching that, it was kind of like a lot of libertarian philosophy and stuff that I've since read put into easier to digest terms, and he really got to the root of the problem. And he was the first person to bring up, we need to do something about the Federal Reserve. And so people are, you know, they're talking about these superficial issues, but Ron Paul to me really got to the root of the issue. And the ideology was so consistent and not hypocritical to me, whereas I see a lot of hypocrisy on both sides. This was the most consistent, I actually believe in liberty, liberty leads to prosperity ideology I saw. And so that's how I got into Ron Paul.
Okay. So I guess you would say that the internet definitely played a role.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And right. And watching him on TV during yeah. the debates. And that's when I thought to myself, oh, Ron Paul's crazy. I can't believe this guy's running again. And seeing the contrast between him and the other Republicans on the stage, it was just an incredible difference.
Right. And I know that, you know, being friends with you on Facebook and on, you know, Twitter and different social media sites, mm-hmm. You know, you've got a lot of friends who follow the same political ideologies that you do.
Mm-hmm.
Do those people have similar backgrounds transitioning into following the libertarian movement or the liberty movement?
Mm-hmm.
Do they come from different backgrounds? Can you mm-hmm. explain that a little bit?
So one of my best friends in the liberty movement, Brittany, she in 2012 was campaigning for Barack Obama.
Okay.
And same thing, got introduced to Ron Paul and read one of his books. And that's how she got into it. Mm. And so I would probably say maybe more people come from the right, but only slightly. There are people coming from both sides because the issues are drawing from both sides.
Right, right.
And definitely a huge youth presence because right. from, you know, so the day we were born, we've been at war.
Exactly.
And so we kind of call ourselves the generation of war. And
you being libertarians.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. 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 Right.
Okay.
And and so there's definitely people from all backgrounds.
See, that's why I think about the internet being, you know, kind of like Ron Paul and Rand Paul's best friend.
Mm-hmm.
All of the libertarians that I feel like I meet are mm-hmm. all, you know, between the ages of 16 and 25.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
Why do you feel like the older generations haven't really, you know, taken on to the principles that mm-hmm. you guys espouse?
I think a large part of it is that the decisions they're making aren't going to affect them. So with the debt, that falls totally on our generation. And our decisions or their decisions come onto us. And so they're not going to find the consequences of what they're doing. And so I think that kind of broadly, I guess, and I don't think that this is the root of libertarianism, but a lot of what would draw people to us is that we're fiscally conservative because we understand that there's this crushing debt that our generation's going to inherit, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. that we're also, we've like grown up learning diversity is a good thing, mm-hmm. and we've never really lived at a time where gay marriage was wrong. It's kind of right. always been an accepted thing in more recent years as we've been coming into the political era, I guess. Right. And so,
well, going back to youth, you know, one thing that we hear Rand Paul talk about a lot, and I actually heard him talk about this on Meet the Press this past week, he said, you know, the polling numbers aren't necessarily scientific, mm-hmm. and they're pretty much, you know, not representative of who's going to actually turn out in both the primaries and the general election. Mm-hmm. So how do you feel about that then?
Yeah, I am a big fan of lies, damn lies, and statistics. Okay. I think that after taking some statistics courses and a polling course at UVA, you can skew statistics however you want to. And they are largely based on, especially for these presidential polls that they're doing, what time of day they're doing it, who they're asking, because they're often polling during the day on landlines.
Exactly. You know, so I feel like a lot of the people who are going to show out for Rand Paul haven't really had a voice yet. Is that another reason why you think that the people who aren't on the internet, you know, they're just not as exposed mm-hmm. to Ron Paul and Rand Paul and the Liberty Movement?
Well, I definitely know that the mainstream media excludes us. And with Ron Paul in 2012, it was like, oh, Ron Paul actually gets most of the delegates from Iowa. Ron Paul's top three in New Hampshire, never reported. They'll say like, oh, like number one was this, and you know, then fourth place was this, and then totally skip over Ron. And that plays a big portion into just politics in general is how much the media has control over what we see and hear mm-hmm. and how they are selectively picking issues. And this goes for everything, but definitely right. plays into the election is what are they talking about? They're deciding the agenda
yeah.
and they're ignoring these candidates because ultimately they threaten kind of yeah. their enterprise.
Yeah. And I think it's really easy to sit here right now in, you know, January 2016 and say the only two candidates we've really seen on TV are Donald Trump and mm-hmm. Hillary Clinton. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've seen candidates on both sides complain about that exposure. You know, Donald Trump was on SNL, and yeah. the next week we have candidates on that side, you know, who are pulling under 1% saying, you know, give me time.
Yeah.
Do you think that the people that, so like I said that I heard Rand Paul on Meet the Press, mm-hmm. you know, people our age aren't watching Meet the Press right. on Sundays. Mm-hmm. So what do you think he needs to do in addition to his internet efforts? What mm-hmm. do you think he needs to do to reach out to more youth
yeah.
and to reach out to people outside of his usual demographics?
So he was on Colbert last night and did a good job there. And yeah, that's going to be the struggle, I think, is getting the message out to people that vote too, which is the problem because though young people are going to be the most receptive to what he's saying, probably they're also least likely to vote. And I think that what Rand needs is what Obama had in 2008, which is youth turning out in numbers that they don't normally turn out in. So hopefully that's what we're going to see in Iowa. But I just don't know if that is what's going to happen. And so it really takes, in Iowa, it's really going to take an organized group of people. And, from what I've heard, you know, we are doing the best to organize the youth and make sure the youth show up, to the caucus because a lot of people are just not familiar with what actually happens at the caucus and how, and the media will run with the exit polling, I believe, or the straw poll, actually, sorry. And with the straw poll in 2012, Ron Paul wasn't first, but we trained all the Ron Paul people to stick around. We're like, hey, if you stick around, you can be elected as a delegate, I believe, and the delegates are the people that actually vote. And in Iowa, at the time, in 2012, it wasn't binding, so you could vote for whoever. So we got, while everyone left after the straw poll, everyone, you know, had their moment to feel important, they voted right. in the straw poll, the Ron Paul people stuck around and were the ones that were chosen as the delegates. And so that is how Ron Paul won Iowa in 2012, right. is because they went and then they, of course, all voted for Ron Paul. So we try and train our people, so a lot of the same type of people or even same individuals are working with Rand. So hopefully we can see the same type of thing happen, but I believe the votes are binding now, so But what I think, going back to what I said earlier, what we need is the youth to turn out like they did for President Obama in 2008.
Okay, so to kind of switch gears a little bit, you know, we're talking about libertarianism. You are a libertarian.
Yes. And
will you be voting for Rand Paul?
Yes.
So why is Rand Paul running as a Republican?
Rand is running as a Republican because he is a Republican. As much as the mainstream Republicans would like to think that Rand is a libertarian, he's not. He's just the most libertarian. So he's running as a Republican, like I said, because he is. He's from Kentucky, has to kind of respond to a more conservative constituency, and is not half of what Ron Paul was, especially in terms of just being liberty on all issues. He'll still vote with, you know, Republicans on several things, where Ron's just voting no on principle because the federal government shouldn't deal with that issue anyways.
Right.
Things like that. So Rand is still very much a Republican. He just happens to be the most libertarian out of the bunch, which is why I think that this is a practical step towards liberty.
Okay.
Ron was a spokesperson, kind of got the movement started, got people talking about issues we hadn't been talking about before. And Rand is a more practical step to have someone with those types of ideas in office.
Okay.
So that's why I'm supporting Rand.
Okay. So you're framing him as more of the more electable Ron Paul.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So then, like, when we watch these debates and whatnot, you know, we see Rand Paul quibbling with, you know, Donald Trump or whomever. Actually, I don't know if it's been Donald Trump, but, you know, there have been a few times where on stage
he's gone back and forth. He did call him out once.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. Was it Christie, I remember, I think, in the first or second debate that he got into it with?
Yep.
Anyway, so he, you know, he's kind of trying to show that he disagrees with these other Republicans on stage.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that that's going to earn him votes in these, you know, upcoming primary states?
So Rand's debate tactics of differing with everyone, I hope, are a breath of fresh air. It's not the mainstream Republican, this is what we believe, we've anointed the new person to be elected, and here he is. But showing that we don't have to follow what we've been doing, and if we do follow what we've been doing, the Republican Party is going to die out figuratively and literally, because the people voting Republican are in the older age groups, and that's just going to die off. We have to cater to what is up and coming, the younger generation specifically. And his tactics of disagreeing with people are just him being honest on his ideals and not catering to every single Republican, clearly, because he differs a lot on foreign policy. And Republicans are somewhat split on kind of the NSA. There are still a lot of Republicans who are quote-unquote small government but are huge NSA fans, like Chris Christie when he had that quibbling.
Right.
So that's the security versus liberty debate.
Okay.
And just not being wishy-washy and taking a firm stance that, hey, this was supposed to be the party of liberty and the party of freedom, and that's what I stand for.
Okay. Could you elaborate a little more on, you mentioned Rand Paul's NSA stance. Could you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah. So in Rand Paul's words, the NSA and just the government in general need to get the hell out of his business and the hell out of all of our businesses.
Okay.
And the NSA, what we trade there is not, we don't even trade liberty for security. We trade liberty for the illusion of security.
Right.
And that the government can't protect us in the way it promises it can, and that all the politicians on the stage promise it can. What we've seen come out of this program is really nothing productive at all. In the cases where some politicians, even though this is like a classified committee where they talk about the NSA and what the program has done with the phone tapping and mass data collection metadata, is that some will say, oh, we've stopped terrorist attacks doing this. Others will say, actually, no, we haven't. In these cases, we've obtained an actual warrant and had probable cause, and then gone in to investigate what was going on and possibly did stop an act of terrorism. And yeah, that's what we should use the system for, is get a warrant or don't look at people's information, because it's not the government's right to do so. It violates your right to privacy, which comes from the Fourth Amendment and the Ninth Amendment.
Right. And are there any other policies you think that young people specifically are, you know, should be head over heels about regarding Rand Paul?
Criminal justice reform is in some ways bipartisan, and, you know, Republicans might look at it from like a money standpoint and Democrats might look at it from a minority standpoint, but it's something that totally needs to be dealt with and changed. And I think that's another youth issue that youths are caring more and more about at UVA, our alma mater. The incident last year with the ABC officer who's like pseudo police, wears a, you know, Rambo uniform,
For those who aren't familiar with the situation, a student was arrested by the alcoholic beverage control. Is that what that stands for? Was arrested outside of a bar, just, you know, walking around or something like that. And, you know, was brutally slammed down. The pictures looked horrible.
He had blood like coming down his face, and the police asked for his ID, which he doesn't have to show them. It's one of those know your rights scenarios where the police and the pseudo police will take advantage of you because you don't know your rights. You don't know that really the only time you have to have your ID on you is when you're driving. And things like that, that our generation could be taken advantage of, really any generation, I suppose, but that we're more passionate about because we're seeing it happen with people our age. And so at UVA, people on both sides of the aisle were rallied by that. Like, hey, what is going on? Because we all go to that spot on weekends. It could have been any of us, but probably not me because I'm white. But it's not necessarily a race issue. It's, you know, it's somewhat of a rights issue.
Yeah, and you see it as a rights issue.
See it as a rights issue. And the fact that the ABC is a monopoly on alcohol in the first place is ridiculous. And then it's ridiculous
in the state of Virginia, at least.
And they also, it's in other states as well. In Virginia. And, you know, and then the fact that they get to carry around guns and enforce their own rules, it's, that's, you know, totally anti-market, anti-rights. And so, you know, that deals with just criminal justice and law enforcement.
So then on a broader scale, what kind of policies would Rand Paul implement that he couldn't in the Senate? Or is there something new, you know, based off of, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement or any of the cases that we've seen, you know, recently, Tamir Rice, Eric Garner, you know, the list literally goes on and on.
Even though people try and ignore it.
You know, are there any newer policies that he, you know, wants to implement? Is it just, you know, the usual, you know, cameras on cops, stuff like that?
So I haven't heard him with cops specifically. I haven't heard him talk about the body cams.
Because I've seen, sorry to cut you off. I've seen that, you know, I've seen him say multiple times that he wants to stop giving military equipment to police forces.
Absolutely. It's a big libertarian issue.
Yeah. And I feel like people our age are definitely, you know, definitely behind that, you know, behind not having to, you know, see a traffic stop where an officer is coming up to you in a bulletproof vest.
Or a bulletproof vehicle. That's a militarization of police is a big libertarian issue, and that it's insane, and that it's,
Be done. We'll explain why it's insane.
It's insane because the police don't have that authority, I guess. They are different from, and just like the military doesn't have the power to arrest. We keep them separate for a reason, and the police don't really have any scenarios, for the most part, where they need that equipment, and for the most part aren't trained to use that equipment. Now, there are certain scenarios where that becomes necessary, but the average police officer doesn't need to have hand grenades or things like that. And we see this a lot with the war on drugs, is that these weapons are used to target drug offenders, non-violent criminals, and are using a huge use of force on a crime with no force at all.
I think we should have an entire separate episode regarding, you know, the criminal justice reform and things like that, because it goes far beyond just, you know, Republicans, Democrats, Libertarians, whatever party or movement you follow. I think there are a lot of things in there, you know, private prison systems, etc.
I'll come back for it.
We'll have to get you back on. But so talking about civil rights a little bit, one thing that kind of confuses me about Rand Paul is his stance on gay marriage. And I kind of was hoping that you could shed some light on that. So according to a Christian Coalition survey, I think in August of 2010, Rand Paul said that he supported an amendment to ban same-sex marriage. And earlier, I guess now in 2015, last year, on the campaign trail, he said that he thinks marriage should be left to heterosexuals and believes that homosexuals should be bound to contracts.
Mm-hmm.
But then he also goes back and says, you know, to that same token, he says that he believes that gay couples should share equal federal benefits.
Mm-hmm.
So can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah, so I guess from those statements, there's somewhat of a wishy-washy standpoint. I was standing behind him in one interview where he said that they have the same rights and didn't go much farther than that, I guess. And I think that's where Rand is more Republican.
Right.
But where the libertarian point comes in is even if you do believe that gay marriage is wrong, it doesn't really matter because people have the right to exercise their own religion and live their life the way they want to. And so I guess Rand has been a little wishy-washy on it, but what he would say, what I think he would say is that he doesn't personally believe that it's okay, but that they are due equal rights. Where if he wants to call it something different, that I wouldn't agree with. I think in history we've seen that separate but equal doesn't work.
Right.
But Rand would definitely say, and I've heard him say on several occasions, why is the government in marriage at all?
Yeah. And okay, so, you know, we can talk about that. But, you know, I think Rand Paul kind of sees it as, at least from my understanding, is mm-hmm. that he sees that there has generally been a religious connotation to marriage.
Right.
And so he wants to uphold that.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that that's kind of him playing up to whatever Republican base he may have mm-hmm. or just Republican voters in general?
I think it's definitely a possibility. Like I said, he does come from Kentucky, and so you kind of always have to think about their constituencies. But, you know, marriage is a religious institution in itself. Why is the government a part of it? So, okay. And I think okay. that Rand would say, and libertarians would definitely say, that you have a right to enter into any contract that you want. And that, and to the government, all marriage is a contract.
Okay.
So if it's going to be involved in this contract, then everyone should be able to enter equally into this contract.
Okay, so then to me it seems like, you know, he wants everybody to have the same rights. And mm-hmm. So then why doesn't he reduce, you know, all heterosexual marriages to contracts with the government?
Right. And that's what I would say to do. And that's probably the more Republican side in him. And I don't know why people feel the need to have their marriage recognized by the state, but they do. And I mean, people go back to is just like the definition, quote unquote, mm-hmm. of marriage, and that it's between a man and a woman. And that's because it's a religious thing.
Right.
For some reason, and I don't understand this, a lot of Republicans, maybe including Rand, are just sticklers on that definition and want to protect that definition. But when it comes down to the contract side of it, you should freely be able to enter into contracts that you want to, and that right extends equally to everyone.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, the reason why I ask if, you know, that's, you know, you said that you think that that's the Republican side of him coming out.
Uh-huh.
I mean, the reason why I bring it up is because in 2013, he said, quote, "I don't think I've ever used the term gay rights because I don't really believe in rights being based on your behavior."
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that just kind of irks me again, because if I'm going to vote for somebody who sees my life as a choice,
right.
as a behavior,
mm-hmm.
rather than just who I am,
mm-hmm.
You know, that just kind of seems wrong to me. You know, that seems like this person doesn't truly understand that this is my life, this is my
right.
being.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah. And I don't disagree with you necessarily on that, and that's why I'm not, you know, I don't think I definitely don't 100% agree with Rand, and I don't know if I'll ever 100% agree with
mm-hmm.
a
mm-hmm.
presidential or political candidate.
Mm-hmm.
But I have faith that if, you know, given the choice, or if there's like a bill or whatever on it as president, Rand is going to err on the side of the government should not be involved in this matter, and that you should be able to exercise your free will.
You know, on that note, one thing that he and his father both strongly disagree with the Republican Party on is military spending, is, you know, foreign policy, interventions, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Can you elaborate more on that? I know we touched on it just a little bit.
Yeah, so we, to have a strong national defense, we don't need to be stationed in 130 plus countries. It's called a national defense, not a national offense. And they both believe in strong national defenses based at home. But not...
Well, let me stop you there for just a second. Sorry. Why? If I can put it bluntly, why is, you know, stationing our military in 130 countries, why is that labeled an offense rather than our simple national defense?
Because what we see is a large amount of blowback from countries where we have troops stationed. Because people are mad that we're just there. And we don't need to start that controversy or start an issue by having a presence there that just ticks people off, or by trying to nation build or create police states in these other nations that negatively affect the people there. So we have seen both Ron and Rand and libertarians see much more of blowback and much more of an issue from being there than peace, quote unquote, coming from being there.
Okay.
And libertarians are trying to work towards a freer and more peaceful society. Right. And we think that they go hand in hand.
Yeah. And I think that's one place, you know, thinking about, you know, the fact that President Obama recently lifted the embargo with Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's something that Rand Paul was, I guess if you can call it a curve, was ahead of the curve.
Yes.
On, right. He's been talking about that for a while.
Right. And we think that that goes along with a non-interventionist foreign policy, because people, especially with Ron, call him an isolationist. But that's people that are for embargoes are the people that are isolationists.
Mm-hmm.
They're isolating themselves from trade with that nation. It's the people that are imposing sanctions and embargoes and not allowing people to freely move across borders that are the isolationists. It's not us on the other side, free trade, free movement, and diplomacy, but not necessarily alliances with other nations. That is what we see as our foreign policy.
Yeah. And I think one thing that kind of gets lost in the mud is the difference between being interventionalist and being isolationist.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And Rand and Ron are often called isolationists.
Right.
Do you think that that's fair?
Mm-hmm. No, it's definitely not fair, because like you can see with Cuba, Rand wants to have a relationship with Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
We're not the ones freaking out about, you know, what's going
on. So is it that in pulling back the military, Rand Paul would increase diplomacy, or mm-hmm. is it just that you want to pull out the military just for sake of, you know, saving money?
I think, well, we definitely do want to save money. And that's one thing that Rand continues to point out on the debate stage, is that you cannot call yourself, like Marco Rubio, you cannot call yourself a fiscal conservative and be hungry for war, because war is extremely expensive.
Right.
And we took together ethics and human rights and world affairs, and our professor, like he was like the cuckoo, you know, guy at the time, predicting this high cost of the war in Iraq.
Mm.
And what we saw is that was a conservative estimate based to what actually happened. But he was the crazy guy for thinking it would cost that much. So money is definitely an issue. But more beyond that, it's, you know, in somewhat of an ethical issue. It causes more harm and puts us more, makes us more vulnerable as a nation, which is not defending us. And we do want to trade and be diplomatic with as many people as we possibly can.
Mm-hmm.
Why would we not want to be?
And that's I think one place where, or excuse me, one issue where I think people would criticize Rand Paul of being, or at least Republicans would criticize Rand Paul of being further left than Democrats.
Soft on terror.
Exactly, right. I mean, even, you know, we saw Hillary Clinton the other day, somebody said, you know, why are you so, in the debate, they asked, you know, why are you so close with Wall Street?
Mm-hmm.
And she, you know, her answer was 9/11.
Everyone's answer is 9/11.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So you kind of touched on how being anti-interventionalist and being anti-war relates directly with trying to save money. I think Rand Paul at one point, or on multiple occasions, has said something to the effect of, we should stop sending money to countries who hate us. So can you elaborate a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think at least part of what he means is that we continue to send weapons and human resources and, I guess, capital in general to places that don't like us, don't want us there, etc. And why would we do that? Why would we waste not only money but human lives on a situation that could have been prevented in the first place?
Yeah. Okay, so going back to libertarianism in general, I know that there is this chart.
We were kind of referred to it sometimes as the smallest political quiz.
Okay.
And, like, I forget what the actual chart is called, but...
It's called the Nolan chart, and it's kind of like this, you know, diagonal square that's got quadrants. It's got a smaller square in the middle. It says, you know, moderate. The right corner says right conservative. The left corner says left liberal.
Mm-hmm.
If you go up, it's libertarian, and down is populist.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've kind of seen it slightly different, whereas libertarian is is contrasted with totalitarian or, you know, some crazy word like that.
Mm-hmm.
Could you describe this a little bit?
Yeah.
Or could you explain what it's about?
Yeah, so it's, we think of political ideology as more of this diamond shape where people want to describe it as a line. You're either left or right, and that's kind of how libertarians lots of times get shoved on the right. It's like, oh, they're fiscally conservative, we're gonna put them here. But we see it more as a diamond, with one side of it being, one axis, I guess, being economic freedom, and then the other side being social freedom. And so we normally have ours as libertarian at the top and totalitarian at the bottom. And so the farther you go up on each side, if you get to the top point, that would be maximum freedom on both the economic scale and the social scale. So if you fall all the way to the right, then you're conservative on just economic issues, but not social, and vice versa. And so that's, the libertarian is, you are believer in both. And so we'll do Operation Political Homeless at UVA and get people to take the world's smallest political quiz and place them on the grid. And because people generally today kind of are, or a lot of people today in our generation are fiscally conservative, but not socially conservative, then they'll fall in the libertarian box, and we get the chance to talk to them about liberty and our philosophy.
Okay, yeah, because I'm looking at this this Nolan chart for Rand Paul right now, and it says that he is a libertarian conservative.
Right.
So explain to me what a libertarian conservative is.
And so I think a good example of that is kind of a stance on gay marriage. So he's leaning more to the right, because that social issue is one that he wavers on.
Okay.
And so on our chart, we have a big chart where we'll get people to put stickers on. It has people's faces in different boxes. So it has, like, Karl Marx at the bottom, totalitarian, and then, you know, Hillary Clinton on one side, and what, you know, people in different places. And Ron Paul is the top block of libertarian, just because he's a recognizable face that believes a lot in liberty. And there is a lot of, like I said earlier, kind of different factions and stuff within libertarianism, but in general, he's a good face of what liberty
I know,
is.
Yeah, I know one, or just the first thing that came to mind when I saw this, actually, this chart about Rand Paul, was his views on abortion. You know, he believes that life begins at conception. So that's probably, you know, pulling him way over the right.
Yeah. And that's probably the only issue that libertarians are divided on, I guess, is, so we're always going back to rights. And if you believe that life begins at conception, then you're looking at the rights of the baby. If you don't believe that, then you're looking at the rights of the woman.
Mother, right.
So it depends on what the definition of life is, which, will we ever agree on that?
Probably not.
I don't think so. And so it will, you know, will science ever be able to prove that? I don't know. And so until then, there's the separation of whose rights are we caring about, but we always, that's what we're always looking back to, is who rights in the instance.
Okay. Grace, thanks for joining Cool for Thought. I guess before you go, the last thing that I want to ask you to do for us is, give us your best pitch for libertarianism.
Why should you vote for Rand Paul? Rand Paul understands that there is a debt looming over our generation's head, and that we are, our spending is way out of control, and we need to do something about it. But at the same time, he's talking about social issues that deal with our generation, like criminal justice reform, getting rid of the NSA, getting rid of the NSA program that everyone's up in arms about. And so he is doing both sides of that scale that we just talked about. He's looking at the economic freedom scale, and he's leaning towards freedom on that. And on the social issues, he's leaning towards freedom on that. So he's giving you, he's letting you live your life the way that you want to. Why should you vote for a liberty person, a liberty candidate? because libertarianism, unlike the Democratic or Republican parties or ideologies, doesn't force you to do a thing. The people that are elected from either of these two parties want to be elected so that they can design the system to force people to act a certain way. Libertarians want to be in power so that they can let you do what you want with your life. So that's the difference, is that both of the parties are trying to force what they believe on you, where libertarians want you to have the freedom to believe whatever you want. So we agree on a lot of things when we have discussions, but we disagree on so many things when libertarians get together and talk. But what we share in common is that we don't believe that you should be forced to act or believe in a certain way, but that you have the right and you're born with this right to do whatever you want and to live your life freely. And so it's much different. That it's just different from either side. It's not really, we don't see it as left versus right. We kind of see it as the state versus you, because the left and the right are saying very similar things. But what we want is to you not to be forced or coerced to do anything against your will.
Cool. Well, I think that's the best pitch for libertarianism that I've ever heard. So if our followers want to follow your life a little bit, keep up with you, where can they find Grace Charlton?
They can find me on Twitter at @GraceForLiberty, the number 4. And by the way, they should check out FreeRoss.org.
Cool. What's FreeRoss.org?
FreeRoss.org is a website detailing the trial of Ross Ulbricht and the defense that they're mounting for the appeal, where he created the website, or played a role in creating the website, The Silk Road, on the Tor browser, which is where you can, a place where you can anonymously browse the internet. And it was a free marketplace website, and people bought and sold drugs on the website. And though they haven't connected him to the sale of the drugs, or even proven that he was the moderator of the site at the time that these sales happened, they've put him in jail for 2 consecutive life sentences without parole for a nonviolent crime.
Well, hopefully we can have you back on, Grace. It was great talking to you, and thanks again for being on.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I want to thank everyone for listening to part 2 of our 2016 election series. What do you think about libertarianism? Tweet me your thoughts at @UHREEB, and remember to follow Grace at Grace for Liberty. This is the Cool for Thought podcast, and I'm Areeb Khan. Stay hungry.